rampaging and murder and killing innocents, but in pursuit of justice for those people that have been horribly targeted for a great many years.
Thank you very much, sir. Barry Grossman, international lawyer, joining us from Bali, Indonesia. You're watching Press TV's rolling coverage of the ongoing developments in the region as the Israeli aggression and massacres continue in Lebanon and the Gaza Strip as well. And, of course, we're focusing on the aftermath of... We're also focusing on the aftermath of the Israeli aggression and its actions as Iran on Tuesday carried out Operation True Promise 2, where it launched 200 ballistic missiles on Israeli targets deep inside the occupied Palestinian territories. We've been focusing on that as well. Iran's defense minister recently issued a statement saying that the recent retaliatory operation against the Israeli regime had been more than 90% successful. We also talked to the government spokesperson earlier addressing various aspects of the Iranian anti-Israeli retaliatory Operation True Promise 2. The defense minister went on to say that the countermeasures were carried out based on the United Nations Charter, stressing that Iran took military objectives into consideration. We are going to continue with our rolling coverage here on Press TV. If I'm correct, we're going to go for a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Chris Williamson, and you're watching Palestine Declassified. Our twice-weekly programme exposes the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's episode, we'll be concentrating on the scandal-ridden Jewish Chronicle, which has sunk to a new low in terms of journalistic standards. It's resulted in prominent corporate media figures, who were among its regular columnists, scurrying for cover as they attempt to distance themselves from this discredited Zionist rag. In our first report, Latifa Abu Chakra sets out the latest calamity to hit the paper and the extent of the fallout.
Scandal has erupted at the Jewish Chronicle, an anti-Palestinian newspaper based in London, after it removed a series of articles allegedly containing fabricated quotes from officials within the Zionist regime. The articles were written by a reporter named Elon Perry, whose real name appears to be Eli Yifrach. Perry was taken on by the Jewish Chronicle over the summer as a freelance reporter. But Perry's credentials are questionable. While Perry claims to have been a professor at Tel Aviv University for 15 years and to have served as a commando during the Entebbe raid, this history seems to be completely invented. Nevertheless, his reporting was not properly scrutinized until the beginning of September, when he wrote an article about a fake escape plot by Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar. The false story, based on supposed intelligence sources within the Zionist regime, claimed that Sinwar planned to escape to Iran alongside the remaining Israeli hostages. The story blew up within Israel, prompting a backlash from the Israel occupation forces, which said that the story was based on fabricated intelligence. But why did Perry make this claim? After all, his claim was similar to statements made by Benjamin Netanyahu, who had used the alleged escape plot as an excuse to keep Zionist forces on the Gaza-Egypt border. It appears that the Jewish Chronicle served as a mouthpiece for Netanyahu's disinformation operation in an attempt to assist Israel's genocidal campaign. That wouldn't be surprising given the paper's long-standing support for Zionism and Israel's campaigns of terrorism against Palestinians over many years. The paper has published Nakba denial, repeatedly smeared pro-Palestine campaigners, and provided justification for Zionist atrocities. The paper's vicious and libelous tendency were particularly notable during Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the Labour Party, when he and his supporters were repeatedly branded Jew-baiters and anti-Semites. The paper has also been the subject of numerous complaints to the Independent Press Standards Authority and has been sued multiple times. As a result, it has been forced to withdraw many articles over the years, as well as issue apologies and pay damages to the people it has smeared. The latest controversy has seen numerous high-profile columnists walk away from the paper, including former Guardian editor Jonathan Friedland, as well as David Baddiel, Hadley Freeman, and David Aronovich. Friedland, despite his own pro-Israel worldview, attacked the paper for being a partisan ideological instrument and said that it had no real accountability because the paper's owners are unknown. The scandal at the Jewish Chronicle highlights the fractures within...
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, here we end our live coverage of the events in occupied Palestine and Lebanon temporarily. We go back to our regular programming, but throughout today we shall continue with our live coverage of the events in occupied Palestine, Lebanon. For now, we go back to our regular programming.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Lebanon will persist, the resistance will stand, and the Zionist regime will perish. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, the Secretary General of Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorist movement, the Hezbollah, was a pious, patriotic, prudent, and peerless person with firm faith in God Almighty, divine justice, prophethood, imamat, and resurrection for the final judgment. Unlike the godless Zionists and their equally ungodly terrorist backer, the Antichrist called the U.S., in other words, the dire consequences of the assassination of the 64-year-old Sayed has not only ensured eventual victory for the party of God, but has accelerated the fast-approaching end of usurper child killer regime of Israel. For the Zionist war criminals, however, as well as their comrades in crimes against humanity, from Harry Truman to Joe Biden and his ill-fated successors, the roasting in hell will be everlasting. A recollection by renowned author and commentator Vijay Prashad of martyred Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah says, he led the resistance, which will not bend but grow as his memory, an example seed, a new generation. He fought for his people despite immense personal cost and was hated by his enemies because he defeated them. I saw him speak in Beirut in 2013, a most impressive man and a brilliant strategic thinker. His loss is a blow to Lebanon, but he has taught two generations how to succeed him. Press TV said, though the Zionist regime suffered various defeats at the hands of Hezbollah since then, it is clear that the right-wing racist regime headed by extremist fascists has failed to learn lessons. The settler colonial regime's current military assault on Beirut's densely populated residential neighborhood al-Zahia has resulted in the horrific slaughter of countless civilians. The recent massive airstrikes using at least 15x5000 IB U.S.-supplied bunker buster bombs to assassinate Nasrallah. Emergency operations continue battling to rescue people trapped in the rubble of the entire block of 8 residential buildings housing hundreds of civilian families. Addressing the media shortly after the horrendous bombings, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken not only failed to distance America from the strikes, but shamelessly sought to justify it by repeating the false mantra of Israel's right to defend itself. Without batting an eye, Blinken's remarks focused entirely on securing the interests of America's proxy regime in Tel Aviv. The language he used, as well as the talking points he repeatedly made, were straight out of the Zionist regime's playbook. Like his boss, Joe Biden, Blinken was unable to provide a rational response to questions about the so-called U.S.-French ceasefire initiative that was presented a week earlier as having been agreed upon by the Zionist regime. Yet Netanyahu shut it down, causing huge embarrassment in the U.S. State Department, but Blinken remained aloof from the Zionist regime's intransigent rebuttal. It confirms that the colonial entity is not only a renegade, but a huge liability to its main ally. As is well known, the Zionist regime's dependence on American arms and ammunition, including full political and diplomatic backing, is the main reason for the impunity whereby the Zionist regime behaves like a distempered dog. While the recent attack is being claimed by the Polish immigrant Milikowski Netanyahu to have targeted Hezbollah's operations center, most mainstream media fail to mention that, without American arms and ammunition, its client regime would not be able to reduce residential buildings to dust. Recently, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that the U.S. would continue to provide military aid to Israel, ignoring the idea of red lines, even as he warned that an all-out conflict between the Zionist regime and Hezbollah would be devastating. Netanyahu and his criminal gang of warlords are fully aware that being party to a joint U.S.-French agreement and subsequently defying it by pressing ahead with devastating bombings that have killed hundreds in Lebanon will have no consequences in the White House. As far as the Biden administration and all previous American governments are concerned, red lines are applicable to others, not the occupying regime in Tel Aviv. Lebanon will persist. The resistance will stand. The Zionist regime will perish.
In the limelight.
Right from the podium of the United Nations General Assembly recently, the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued orders to assassinate Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement in Lebanon. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "No, not from his hotel room in Manhattan. No, not from an office in the United Nations headquarters in New York. Right from the podium of the United Nations General Assembly recently, The Zionist regime crime minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued orders to assassinate Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement in Lebanon, shortly after leaving the podium following his Churchill-like speech. The megalomaniac Tel Aviv regime premier ordered the carpet bombing of the southern suburb of Beirut, known as Zahia. Residential buildings and civilian infrastructure in the neighborhood were razed to the ground within seconds as Netanyahu walked away from the UN podium. He addressed a bunch of UN delegates who have been cheering the Zionist regime genocide in Gaza for 1 year, while others, with conscience, walked out of the hall, snubbing the war criminal. Hours after the deadliest strikes on Beirut since 2006, an image emerged of Netanyahu speaking on the phone with two military officials standing behind him in what appeared to be from New York, but is unknown whether it was taken at his hotel room or at the UN headquarters. It is irrelevant to know where the image was taken. What's important is the platform was given, and so was the green light, to execute the order for his forces to assassinate the leader of the Lebanese resistance, who had become a nightmare for Netanyahu and his fellow war criminals. Where is the United Nations, you ask? Where is the International Criminal Court? Where is the International Court of Justice? Look at Palestine for the past 76 years. If you can explain the occupation, then you can explain the existence of international law and how it has repeatedly failed and top dollars paid for it to be so. For the past week, since the start of the 79th session of the UN General Assembly on September 24th, all we have heard from world leaders are calls to stop the suffering in Gaza and the aggression on Lebanon. Their calls seem to have been oblivious to the cries of the children in Gaza found charred, in pieces and buried by their grieving parents, and the cries of the women in Lebanon wrapping their husbands, sons and brothers in the white shroud of martyrdom. Briefly, let's just go over some of the violations that the Zionist regime has committed concerning international humanitarian law and customary international law. In violation of international law's Geneva Conventions, and to conclude all sections of the following: spreading terror among civilians, principle of distinction, indiscriminate attacks, proportionality, illegal means and methods of warfare, targeting medical units and personnel, targeting humanitarian relief personnel, targeting journalists, targeting hospitals and safe zones, destroying the natural environment, destruction and seizure of properties in occupied territory, starvation as a method of warfare, perfidy, weapons that are naturally indiscriminate, incendiary weapons, inhuman treatment and torture, rape and sexual violence, using human shields, inhuman conditions of prisoners of war, the mistreatment of the dead and the missing, forced displacement, destroying property of the displaced, endangering women, endangering children. Over 30 international law violations, and not one prosecutor could issue an arrest warrant against Netanyahu or Yoav Gallant, or Benny Gantz, or even bar Netanyahu from speaking at the UN. For what was the United Nations founded? Wasn't the purpose of this organization to maintain and enforce peace and security? What is the purpose for which the International Criminal Court was established? Isn't it to prosecute individuals who commit crimes against humanity and war crimes? It is quite ridiculous to be asking these questions in a world where human rights have become selective and international law has come to serve those who violate it. When the U.S. threatens the very core of international order, if the men in order dare arrest or prosecute Netanyahu, then it is true to say that justice is blind. The United States is the top funder of the U.N. and many of its bodies, so it's safe to say money talks, or silences in this case. The United Nations was born out of the League of Nations, which was established in 1920 for world peace by U.S. President Woodrow Wilson, who himself endorsed and approved the Balfour Declaration responsible for the occupation of Palestine. After having failed following the outbreak of the Second World War, the UN was founded by U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt and none other than British Prime Minister Winston Churchill. The UN, the ICC, and the ICJ, through their silence and inaction, have become complicit and have given Netanyahu and the US administration the silence to kill. It goes without saying that the mass atrocities and horrors wouldn't have been possible if it weren't for American-supplied F-35s, bombs, drones, and the bunker buster bombs used to assassinate Nasrallah and Iranian military advisor Brigadier General Abbas Nilforushan. Yet, the United Nations rolls the red carpet and gives time and space to murderers like Netanyahu, Biden, Israeli Ambassador to the UN Danny Dininen, and U.S. Ambassador to the UN Linda Thomas-Greenfield to try and justify the violations of international laws and the relentless strikes against civilians in Gaza and Lebanon. The U.S. and Israel do not know what they have just done. Nasrallah's name will never be seen in the same sentence as was. He is more than a leader. He is an idea. He is a school. And ideas and schools never die. And resistance never wilts. Generations were born and generations were raised. The Zionist regime believes it buried the Lebanese resistance, but it does not know that it buried seeds. He is a father of the free, the liberator, the great man who gave hope to the hopeless and was the voice of the defenseless, the man who children like those in Lebanon grew up after hoping one day to meet, the legendary leader who instilled faith in hearts and spoke on the meaning of love, the man who protected Lebanon and Al-Quds with everything he had, the martyrdom of the hero who terrified the Israeli occupation with just the lift of his finger has only made resistance against occupation more resilient and worth being proud of. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah promised us that we would liberate Palestine together and we will pray soon in Al-Aqsa. That is not just a promise, that is the truth on the horizon that we already see near.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And now we're going to give you a quick update before we welcome our next guest, Mohsen Naqvi, activist and commentator out of Houston, Texas. We've been following developments very closely in our coverage of Iran's retaliatory ballistic missile attack on Tel Aviv against the Zionist entity in response to Israel's regional aggression. Now, this was very much anticipated, as Iran had said since the July 31st martyrdom of the political bureau chief of Hamas in the Iranian capital, Tehran, Ismail Haniyeh, that Iran will respond. It actually exercises much restraint and what it called strategic patience, waiting for a de-escalation possibly in the region, possibly of some kind of refuge and recourse for Palestinians. But once it saw that the regime is pushing for more violence, death, destruction, and aggression against regional people, including some of Iran's closest allies, it opted for this retaliatory strike to address Israel's aggression, involving over what many witnesses are saying over 400 ballistic missiles fired upon Tel Aviv. Iran's IRGC says only 10% were intercepted by Israel's air defense system, saying that the onslaught was accompanied by a cyber attack, a large-scale cyber attack. Now, we don't know what that means at this point. It could mean the Iron Dome missile system was hacked, and therefore, or it could have just been that it was overwhelmed by so many missiles simultaneously fired against it. These are stories and questions that will get answered in the ensuing hours as the stories get developed. According to the IRGC, the three military bases in Tel Aviv were targeted, and the barrage also utilized Iran's new Fatah hypersonic ballistic missiles for a first time. Now, the Israeli military has put it at 180 missiles fired against the territory, saying that most were intercepted. We didn't see the little dots flashing in the sky as we usually see when Israel intercepts with its Iron Dome missile system resistance missiles. But for the most part, we saw all of them penetrating the occupied Palestinian airspace and hitting targets inside of Tel Aviv. Mohsen Naqvi, welcome to the conversation here. Your initial thoughts on Iran's operation.
You know, in these moments of sadness when we've lost Shaheed Sayyid Nasrullah, it's giving me goosebumps to even call him Shaheed. In this moment of sadness when the whole world is mourning this great Sayyid, this great leader, a great of not just the Muslim Ummah but of all the oppressed people, it comes as a pleasant surprise that the Islamic Republic of Iran has attacked the Zionist regime and the promise that they have given to Ayatollah Khamenei, the IRGC has fulfilled that promise. And it brings a slight smile on our faces that this is the beginning of the end of the Zionist regime. The axis of resistance has a history of giving surprises. We saw how Sayyid Nasrullah in 2006, when the Zionist regime had spread a rumor that he had been killed, he came on a live telephonic conversation where he was live with his people. And while being live on the phone, he spoke about the ship being attacked from an Israeli missile, from a Hezbollahi missile. Sheikh Qasim Soleimani mentions that it was divinity through which the act of the missile, the Hezbollahi missile, destroying the naval ship, and Sayyid Nasrullah's words, they both coincided with each other. So it gives us a lot of happiness. It gives us some level of content. But there is the revenge of the murder and the assassination of Shaheed Sayyid Nasrullah is nothing less than the eradication of the Zionist regime, the extermination of this disease. They're not just a disease on the people of that land, but rather they are a disease to every oppressed nation in the entire world. There's a reason that the global South doesn't support the Zionist regime. There's a reason why there's an uproar within Judaism against the Zionist regime, where Orthodox Jews don't support the Zionists. They keep using Judaism, they keep using the Holocaust as an excuse to gain support through their propaganda. But it is without a doubt that they are atrocious towards their own Orthodox Jews as well. These are war-mongering individuals who don't care about morality, ethics, and the human and general human life. So the only solution to people like these is to fight them, to resist them. And the Islamic Republic of Iran has had mentioned that this is not an escalation on their part. This is a proportionate response to what the Zionist regime has been doing since the past 1 year. So this is not an escalation. This will not spread or shouldn't spread into a regional war. Israel cannot use this act to involve the US. Israel cannot use this act to spread the war in the region. That's not something that the resistance wants. And this is why they have been showing patience for so many years. Because unlike the Zionist regime, the axis of resistance, led by the Islamic Republic of Iran, they care about the lives of their own people and the lives of all those civilians who are involved in this genocide.
People are out in the streets celebrating, honking car horns, waving Palestinian or a Lebanese or Hezbollah flags, and chanting slogans against the Israeli entity and support of Iran and of resistance. Why this level of jubilation? I mean, you're talking about a city getting attacked by missiles, yet people are celebrating. What does that tell us?
Well, these are people who've lost their loved ones over the past 1 year. They've lost their parents, they've lost children, they've lost daughters, they've lost sons, they've lost friends, they've lost their homes. While they were refugees in tents, those tents were attacked as well. They are trapped inside of Gaza. They are trapped in Rafah. Egypt doesn't open the borders for them. And the axis of resistance fights in defiance of the Zionists, in defense of their own people. The Islamic Republic of Iran, when they fulfill their true promise and they attack the Zionist regime, why wouldn't it bring a smile on the faces of those who have been brutally killed, murdered, and raped by the evil Zionist regime? When the whole world is silent, the whole world, all superpowers that we can imagine, the US, the French, the British, as a matter of fact, they are complicit in this. And then one country, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Without the Islamic Republic of Iran, there is no Hamas, there is no Islamic Jihad, there is no Tulkarm Brigade, there is no PFLP, there is nothing, there is no resistance, without a shadow of a doubt. This is why Hezbollah has lost its senior commanders. They were in the front lines. This is why the Islamic Republic of Iran continues, from Syria up to now, continues to lose generals and commanders and brigadiers of the highest level. Why wouldn't that put a smile on the people's faces? That Iran and Hezbollah, they've taken rockets upon themselves. They have taken hits upon themselves to defend the honorable people of Gaza, to defend the honorable people of Palestine. The Lebanese, the Hezbollah, they voluntarily involved themselves in this genocide in honor of the people of Gaza, to defend the people of Gaza. And this is why they lost Sayyid Nasrullah. Sayyid Nasrullah sacrificed himself for the cause of Quds, for the cause of a free Palestine, for the cause of a world which is free of Zionism. And without the Islamic Republic, none of this was possible. So when the Islamic Republic shows its strength, uses its new hypersonic missiles, ensures that 90% of them land on Tel Aviv. And this is also symbolic. Let's not forget that neither Hezbollah nor the Islamic Republic of Iran, they haven't come out with their full might yet. A lot of these attacks are still symbolic because they want to ensure that a regional war is not spread. They want to ensure that this does not give the so-called superpowers of the world an excuse to spread this into a regional war. Not because the axis of resistance or the Islamic Republic are trying to avoid this war or are scared of such a war or are not capable of defending themselves and fighting in this war, but rather because we are God-fearing, moral, ethical Muslims and human beings. We care about human life. We're not like the animals that the American Empire and the Zionists are, that to kill one person, they will use an illegal bunker bomb that was provided by the U.S. to assassinate Shahid Sayyid Nasrullah, even if that means the assassination and the murder of hundreds of people. Even if that's what it means. So it is, we need to understand that our leaders work from the context of morality. They work from the position of morality and ethics. And hence, why wouldn't they be proud? They are not just happy, but they are proud of their own leaders. They are proud that our leaders are on the front lines giving martyrdom. They are reacting, they are acting, they are defending. They are on the lines. And more than anything, the most important part is that even the enemy trusts the word of our leaders, because they don't lie. When they say something, they do it. And today was a clear evidence to that.
And we also have joining us Abdul Latif Al-Washali, a correspondent, joining us also from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Hello, Abdul Latif. Welcome to the conversation. We also have Mr. Mohsen Naqvi joining us out of Houston, Texas. Abdul Latif, with respect to reactions after Iran uses hundreds of ballistic missiles to target the Zionist entity, especially the city of Tel Aviv was bombed in the afternoon to evening hours of just about 6 or 7 hours ago, local time here in Iran. What are some of the reactions in your neck of the woods, and how are people responding to this operation?
Thank you so much for having me. You know, people are happy today. It's like Eid here. People are celebrating. They're smiling. They're laughing. They feel proud. And this happiness indicates the legitimacy of the Iranian missile strikes against the occupied territories of Palestine. It also indicates how much people have been waiting for this to happen. They feel now proud. They feel that this should have happened a long time ago, as the Israeli regime only believes in the language of force. And, you know, the Iranian regime, the Axis of Resistance, they have been waiting. They have been acting with patience. But the Israeli regime have went so far. They have been assassinating the leaders of the Axis of Resistance. They have assassinated Sayyid Ismail Haniyeh. And they did not respect his presence on Iranian territories. They did that. They also assassinated Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. This is too far. They have been escalating the situation. They have been triggering not only a regional war, but also a world war. You know, the U.S. has been backing the Israeli regime, even though the Israeli regime have been committing war crimes against the people of Palestine for a year now, and they have been committing war crimes against the people of Lebanon and southern Lebanon, even though they are still getting unlimited support by the United States and by Britain, by the Western regimes. So now the Axis of Resistance is acting in response to these crimes, so it is a legitimate right for the Iranian regime to respond to these violations against the civilians, the people in Lebanon and Palestine. Also, the attacks were not against civilian facilities. The Iranian, the IRGC targeted only military targets, air bases, military targets, military sites. So it did not what the Israeli regime have been doing, not only since the beginning of 7th of October of the Al-Aqsa Flood, but, you know, for decades they have been killing the Palestinian people and committing crimes against the Muslims in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, everywhere, even here in the Yemeni capital Sana'a, in Yemen in general. So the it is a legitimate right for the Iranian people, for the Iranian regime, for the Axis of Resistance, the people now in Yemen, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, all the free people around the world. They are now more unified and more determined than ever, and they feel that this is the beginning of the end for the Israeli regime, and they feel like now they will free not only Gaza, not only southern Lebanon or anywhere where the Israeli regime is committing crimes. They feel now they will liberate all the occupied territories, and now is the beginning of liberating Al-Quds al-Sharif, inshallah.
And Abdul Latif, we have heard Tel Aviv leadership saying that they can reach any resistance figure in the region. Are there concerns now in Yemen that possibly the Zionist leadership may go after leaders of resistance in Yemen?
Of course, the regime here, you know, Ansarullah, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the Supreme Political Council, they're expecting such attacks against the leaders of the Yemeni army, against the Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi. But, you know, they're cautious. They're expecting anything from the enemy. They know that this enemy does not respect anything, so they're expecting anything. The Yemeni army is ready to respond to the Israeli aggressions, not only against the Yemeni territories, but anywhere. Yesterday, I spoke to an official from Ansarullah movement, and he said that they consider the attack against the Yemeni territories by the Israeli regime not an Israeli aggression only, but also an American and British aggression, as they considered a military extent for the Americans and the British. They use, you know, they feel like the U.S. and Britain use the Israeli regime as a cover, you know, to stay out of any responsibilities regarding the losses, the civilian losses, the metal losses, anything. So the people here are expecting, the regime here is expecting anything from the enemy. And today, last night, the people have been opening the windows of their homes, expecting air raids from the Israeli regime. But until the moment, I believe nothing happened. But you know, the regime here is ready. The Yemeni army is ready. The people are ready. They're happy. They're not afraid. They feel proud, and they want such attacks to continue, not only from the IRGC, but from the Axis of Resistance in general, from the Yemeni army, from Hezbollah, from the Islamic resistance in Iraq, and from all the free people of the world. Now the resistance movement will be more unified than ever. And you know, if the United States or Britain or the Israeli regime are now thinking about attacking, not Yemen, you know, if they are feeling or thinking about attacking the Iranian territories or the Iranian people, they have to consider that even if the Israeli regime has allies like the U.S. or Britain, Iran also has allies. It has very good relationships with Russia, with China, with North Korea. So if they want to trigger a regional war, they will respond to the IRGC to true promise to.
And Mohsen Naqvi, I want to come back to you for a second out there in Texas. Mohsen, we are certain to hear, and you very well know, a certain depiction of Iran in this operation from Western leaders and Western media. What do you expect that we will hear? What kind of rhetoric, and how do you think, Mohsen, that this operation will be characterized by Western leaders and Western corporate media in the days to come?
Well, first of all, they'll try to minimize the effects of the attack. In my opinion, they'll first try to minimize the attack, because, and there's already a difference in numbers. The numbers that are coming out from the IRGC and the numbers that the Zionists are claiming are very different from each other. Also, the numbers, the IRGC is claiming that 90% of the missiles have actually landed, and there's been impact, and there are videos all over the internet to that effect. Whereas the Zionists are saying that there hasn't been missiles that have landed. They are minimizing the destruction that has taken place, and they'll keep doing that. And as a matter of fact, there is already stuff that is online that they're saying that the oil grids, they use the oil grids in a certain way that at times maximizes the smoke, and it shows that there's more destruction than there actually is, which is obviously a lie. They're trying to minimize and trying to cover up the losses that they have incurred in this attack. That's one. Secondly, they'll try to use this as a context, and they'll use this as an escalation. The Zionists would want to interpret this as an escalation to an extent where now further operations against the Lebanese, further operations against the Gazans, they'll try to justify those actions. They'll try to involve the West. They'll try to involve the U.S. and other forces into this conflict. And Netanyahu's government, Ben-Gavir's government, will try to spread this. But I believe the way the Islamic Republic has proceeded with this retaliatory attack, they've done it in a precise manner. They've done it in a way where there has been a direct hit, where there has been a psychological impact on the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime wanted to psychologically defeat the Muslim Ummah, defeat the axis of resistance. They wanted to create this long-lost persona that they had, that they are untouchable and that they can be anywhere with the chip attacks, in the mobile chip attacks, with the assassination of the top commanders in the resistance, with the shahadat of Shahid Salih al-Aruri, from the martyrdom of Shahid Ismail Haniyeh within the territories of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And then obviously the martyrdom of our beloved Sayyid Nasrullah, Shahid Ibrahim Aqil, Shahid Fawad Shukr, etc. So all of these attacks have been symbolic and have had a psychological impact on not the resistance, but those who follow the resistance. And so this attack has countered that psychological war in many ways, that it has brought the Zionists back to where they were before these assassinations were taking place. The world has been told yet again that in front of the axis of resistance, the Zionists are approachable, the Zionists can be defeated, the Iron Dome and the David Sling are as weak as the spider's web before the axis of resistance. We need to understand the morality, the patience, and the integrity and the ethics behind the way the Islamic resistance, the axis of resistance, retaliates. They have to keep in mind, they have to keep human life in check. They have to keep morality in check. They will not compromise on their principles. This is what distinguishes them from the Zionist crooks. This is for their morality and their ethics and their belief system is what differentiates them from those who are willing to murder innocent men, women, and children.
Thank you, Mohsen Naqvi, activist and commentator there, joining us from Houston, Texas.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This title given to the 11th Imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hasan Al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hasan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hasan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hasan ibn Ali al-Askari, alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the Infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hasan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam. There's a beautiful dialogue that Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam, has with one of his companions. The companion, of course, asks Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam, what to supplicate about and how to supplicate to the Almighty Allah. It was a very beautiful and profound question in this conversation. And what's really amazing is that after 1,000 years or so of the passing of this conversation, the themes and the values and the morals and the concepts that are put forth in this dua are so very much applicable even to the present day. Imam al-Askari alayhi salam continues this dua, which we have been speaking about from this conversation on a few sessions now. And he says that, O my Lord Allah, you see the sufferings of the people of your obedience and what they meet from your enemies. And you, Allah, are generous and never stingy in your blessings. And the more efforts require more reward. and you have ordered your people of supplication